It was the year of deep geeking.
The year of Feedbackapalooza.
The year we discussed our favorite show.
It was the year without Zima.
The year of great tequila.
The year of puns.
And a year of more interviews.
It was a new chance for fun.
It was the end of the series.
It was the year we made it to Crusade.
The year is 2009. The show, Babylon Podcast.
That opening will never get old.
No, it won't.
Welcome back to another Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I am Tim Callender.
And I'm George Clooney, and this is the last time I'm coming on this show.
April Fools.
Yes, because you are George Clooney, but you will be back.
In a sequel.
No.
Next week I'll be Julia Roberts.
Oh, all right. And I'll wear teeth.
In a sequel.
Happy April.
I would actually want to see Jeffrey in drag. I don't know why.
That's just weird, dude. You really
No, it's curious.
This is it. 150 whatever, 3 episodes. This is it.
We're no, done. It's curious. It's curious to me.
Done.
Because you do have great legs.
God, do you make me blush.
Well, to keep Jeffrey distracted, we have some good news.
And what is that good news?
After the hints, we actually have entries for the Chronologies contest.
And we actually have entries that are correct.
Yes.
Chronology contest.
We got one entry that was correct prior to the hints, the breadcrumbs, and like 4 more after that. We only have a total of 20 entries. No, 18. Sorry, 18 entries. Somebody entered 3 times.
That's all right.
So we have, we have to figure out a death match between the correct answers or something.
Yeah.
Because that's what we said. We were going to have, you know, pick someone out of the hat for the right answers. So we have 18 total entries, 5 people who have correct answers, you know, correct names in the correct order. So we have to randomly pick someone.
Oh, I know. Let's get a Mike. You got a 10-sided die?
Why, I might.
Okay, so we're gonna be fair here. Jeffrey, pick a number between 1 and 5.
7.
Typical.
Not good with
response.
Instructions.
No.
Between 1 and 5,
mm-hmm.
Huh?
Just pick a number.
Let's go with Rusty Wallace. I'll say number 2.
Cool. The winner is Gregory Smith.
Nice!
Yay, Gregory! Thank you
for ending this painfully long contest for this.
The all-knowing Vorlon has picked the winner.
Unbelievable.
it seemed like such a good idea at the time, too.
And thank you for the other listener that sent 3 entries in, and Gary, who, of course, must have sent all the other entries in.
Well, no, since Gary was actually one of the voices, he was not allowed to submit an entry because he had the script. He knew who everybody was.
That's it. There's so many people in the stupid thing that no wonder our listenership went down to six people.
No, it was actually misleading because in the script there was actually a name in there who couldn't submit the voice. So literally, Mike here was the last minute replacement because I had asked Kevin to do it. TD0013.
Well, so you need to actually let them know who all the names were.
Yes,
now.
We're going to do that. We're going
Since you've announced
announced it. Where's my list?
See, she don't even know.
I remember. I just want to make sure I get everybody right. You're going to make me go look at this, aren't you?
Tell us, Summer, what did Gregory win?
Gregory won a copy of the Babylon 5 script book, the Chronologies book.
Okay, Mike, this is where you insert the audience applause there.
Yeah, there you go.
Yay!
And a case of Brondo, the thirst mutilator!
Okay, so for the first line, it was the year of deep geeking, was Brad.
Brad Boyer.
So a lot of people actually thought that that was Gary. The second line, it was the year of feedback at Palooza. That was Gary, obviously, because the feedback line is his. He has claimed it many times. The year we discussed our favorite show is Tijan, our favorite Narn. The year without Zima was the hardest one. That was Robin in Soul. She's one of the voices from Between the Lines. Literally, she's beta clone number 62. And I figured as soon as I put that on there, everybody went to Google and go, oh, her. So that was Robin Hudson. The year of great tequila, duh, that was Mike here.
Yep.
And the year of puns was Brian. And for some reason, a lot of people thought that was Edmund. I don't know how, I don't know why, but they did. A year of more interviews was Murr. Murr Lafferty. Murr Lafferty, yes. It was a new chance for fun. That was easy. Everybody got it. That was Yarstow. The end of the series. It was the end of the series. That was Edmund. And then, of course, me with the year we made it to Crusade. And then the year is 2009 with Jeffrey and the show Babylon Podcast with Tim.
And I would have never guessed that in a million years.
A lot of people missed, like Epic failed on the very last line because they've never heard Tim not on the phone.
With and the static and the crappy connection and the and really apparently, bad apparently, phone.
Right. A lot of people thought that Jeffrey said both of those last lines. And I'm like, what? Huh? And then I remembered I've actually heard Tim record other stuff, and yep. I've talked to him on the phone enough that I know the timbre of his voice. So it, I don't know.
Maybe, I figured at the very least you would know from the D5 open that those were separate voices all the way down the line. I would have thought, even if you couldn't, then it sounded both like Jeffrey, you would have thought, wait a minute. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
So we should have just put a telephone effect on Tim and probably been fine.
But yeah, the one thing is like, you know, all the B5 fans know there's one line per voice. Why would you think those last two voices are the same person? But that's
because
okay.
Because we're really screwed up here.
That's true. But maybe. So they were tired. They were doing this very late at night. They were so excited to try and get a free copy of the Chronologies book, but our winner is Gregory, so I will
Gregory.
Be mailing that out to you momentarily.
And
now, of course, Gregory, you can refuse the Chronicles book and go for What's Behind Door Number 2, and we can milk this contest for another 6 weeks.
No.
But then there's only one person to blame, Jeffrey, and that would be you.
All of our runners-up will be receiving the Babylon Podcast home game.
Yeah. Go for What's Behind Shower Curtain Number 2.
No, I can't go there.
Don't do it. Resist.
I can't go there.
Resist.
Somebody told me I had great legs. Go ahead, Michael. The pumps to go with it.
I should also mention.
Can you glide in them?
Oh no! I should also mention that JMS was in the April Fool's mood. Or actually, it's Gary. Gary posted an April Fool's joke saying that the Crusade books would be out by Labor Day, and
wrong.
He's a funny boy. That guy. Oh yeah.
It was really good writing, though. I mean, it had the same tone as a JMS post.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, nicely done.
I mean, he went and he hit everything, including the Crusade will also be the first set of books to be offered electronically. After resisting electronic publishing, I thought, what the hell, let's try it. It will be available through iTunes and Amazon's Kindle, a cute little device that I have been enjoying. And then his disclaimer was, this was a joke and only a joke. JMS is too busy writing. Had the actual Crusade announcement, Jan, Jacqueline, or Jason from the Skips book team would have been announcing it.
exactly.
So thank you, Gary, for entertaining our troops.
Speaking of entertainment, we have Feedback-a-palooza this night.
Woohoo!
And we got Mega Feedback-a-palooza.
So Gary Palooza.
Yeah, it's Gary Palooza Plus, so.
Yeah, it's only about half of Gary. We got voicemail, we got email, we got all kinds of stuff. So I would say let's take a break and then come back and tear this puppy apart.
Hi, I'm Brian Richardson, host of What the Cast, the podcast that has a little something for everyone. We talk about current events.
I'm in the opinion that Wikipedia should be a new wonder, the modern great Library of Alexandria.
It's like the Library of Alexandria written on Etch-a-Sketches. People keep coming by and shaking them every once in a while.
Movies.
Well, what's your biggest problem with the movie? That
Michael Bay!
Okay, no,
The
listen
Island!
To hot robot-on-robot action.
Science fiction.
See, the first 30 minutes of that film really were a good story about a boy and his secretly transforming car.
So it's like Harlan Ellison's a boy and his dog, just without the dog
exactly. And
Harlan Ellison. And every once in a while, math.
Ask me how I rated the movie on a scale from 1 to 5. I said a 5. On a scale from 1 to 10, what would you rate it? I'd say about an 8.
So you're not very good at this whole division and fraction thing.
Someone went to public schools.
So join myself, Crispy, Steven, and Patrick for What the Cast, available at whatthecast.com.
And we have returned to entertain you with the unparalleled mirth, joy, and just basically all the sunshine and goodness in the world brought to us by the feedback.
We have mirth?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I wondered what that smell was.
that was one of the items the three wise guys brought.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why it's got that smell of history.
Gold, Frankenstein, and mirth.
There you go.
So are these in any particular Gary order or non-Gary order? Or
not a particular Gary order, but Mike, if you look, there's one that begins with a Z, and that should come back toward the end of everything.
Which one? What? Thanks so much for the planning session beforehand. I didn't realize we had to put these in order.
No, the only thing that needs to be in any order is there's one that starts with file named Zowie.
All right. Well, let's start this party off.
Hi, guys. It's Edmund from Greenville. Congratulations on reaching 150 episodes.
Hey.
I just wanted to point out that not only has the podcast lasted for more episodes than the original series, but also your spin-off series, Three-Edged Sword, also managed to not get canceled in the middle of the first season. I know that we had that little break in the middle of season 2, but I just wanted to put to rest any rumors that there was tension with FPM or pressure to sex up the show. Yarstow now insists that that slash scene between Tijan and Agent 6 down on the planet was just a joke, just his little tribute to JMS's Londo and Jakar scene. And John and I have chosen to believe him.
Awesome.
That's great. You know what that means, guys, is that means that Babylon 5 really is a podcast that happened to have a television series that came off of it. That's great.
Hey, Badcasters, it's Gary. I was trying to pick up some more Babylon 5 literature so I can, you know, read a little bit more on the story, and I picked up a book called Babylon Files 2 by Andy Lane, and R.L. Jeffrey Willis wrote the foreword. And I know it's been, probably, you know, over 10 years since the show's ended, maybe a little longer, and I was wondering, Jeffrey makes a comment, something to the effect of that he wishes he had left on better terms, and I don't know if it's a sort of subject. I don't know if it's something he wants to go into, but he did actually put it down, you know, in writing in a published book. So I was wondering if Jeffrey sort of could just go into what led to him leaving Babylon 5. We know several stories about, and he detailed in that book, how he came to Babylon 5, and it's a very nice, well-written story. But he sort of chopped it off at the end there, so I was just sort of curious if he could, if he wouldn't mind, you know, talking a little bit about that. And if not, no sweat, Jeffrey. It's always nice to see your name pop up somewhere. Take care, guys. Bye.
Oh, I'm so screwed. I wrote that in a book. Really? Really?
That was
this was a book we couldn't find for a while, but you know how Gary is. He finds the out of print stuff quite well.
Wow. I remember I kind of remember Andy Lane and I wrote the foreword for the book. I wrote the foreword for the book? Really?
Well, somebody named Jeffrey Wolvers did.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
Are you being tactful in that you don't want to say it, or do you really not remember what you wrote?
I honestly don't. I would love to hear what I wrote. Oh my God, that's hysterical! If in the next episode or the next Feedbackapalooza, you guys want to read the whole thing to me, because I would just imagine it was full of. I don't know what it was full of.
Okay, Gary, that's your clue. You're going to have to record. A recording. Make a recording of the foreword and, you know, send it in so we can play it for Jeffrey and then he can comment. How's that?
There we go.
Then he can sue you for copyright infringement.
But he's giving permission for it.
Oh, well.
Because he doesn't remember. And obviously they never send him contributor copies. How, dude? What?
Oh, maybe. I don't want to say that I don't have a copy of it somewhere, but
You have no memory, no recollection zero. Of that, sir.
Zero. Zero. That ship has sailed. I will just to give Gary some answer. There was a set of circumstances that unfolded between Joe and I that just didn't work out as well as we had enjoyed the previous times. So we finally got to a point where things had to change. Let's say it that way. How's that? I don't know that.
I call it creative differences.
Maybe if I just spill it all, maybe that's a way to get Joe on the show, huh? No, he won't. He won't even come on the show. He'll tear me a new hole on some post somewhere. So
he has respectfully declined twice.
Yeah, exactly. So no, it's, you know, it's sort of just business stuff. You know, they're just
it's all,
you know how it is sometimes when you work with a boss for a while and all of a sudden it's not so cool. So I'll leave it at that for now.
Hey guys, this is Gary, and I'm listening to you guys deep geek on Endgame, and you're talking about how Franklin was trying to reach the station to try and, I guess, stop Marcus, and no one really answered or did anything. So I'm trying to think, okay, Sheridan's not on the station, Ivanova's not on the station, Villain's not on the station, Garibaldi's not on the station. So who's left with the keys anyway? The only person I can think of is Corwin. So I guess really we could blame, you know, Marcus' death on Corwin because he wasn't answering the bloody Babcom. So I guess, who knows, maybe he was somewhere playing with that love bat of his and was too busy to bother to, you know, help the station, answer priority calls from the command staff. What the heck is he still doing on the station after that? I know I would have been pissed. Who knows? Anyway, I'd like to hear your guys talk on it, but that's what I say. Corwin's to blame for Marcus's death. If only he picked up the phone. Take care, guys. Bye.
Actually, I'm thinking it would have been Zach.
Thinking that it wouldn't matter who was standing there because Marcus, when Marcus is on a mission, is unstoppable.
How did he get her body off the White Star through whatever, you know, customs into med lab without no one going?
But she was already in med lab.
What?
Yeah. Cause
oh, that's
that
right.
Was
she was already there. She was already. So, okay, he snuck in. He used his, yeah, he used his ranger powers to sneak by.
Everybody.
Everybody. That's right. She was already there.
Yeah. And if you really think about what Medlab looked like in that final scene of Endgame, it looked as much that he was tearing the place apart as a big fight.
He did. He knocked out the people who were there. He tore the lab apart looking for the device, found the device, hooked it up. And, you know, we have evidence from previous episodes. Remember, you know, bloody hell, now I got to wait for somebody to wake up. It takes him a long time to wake up after he hits him. So, okay, so he just snuck on board without explanation, because everybody, I'm guessing at least Zach knew he was out there, you know, fighting.
Nobody's to blame.
We could blame Corwin just for the hell of it.
But if we blame him, we'll never get him on the show to talk to him.
We'll give him his day in court.
Okay.
Hi, guys. This is Gary. I'm listening to Jeffrey and Summer talk about spoo ingredients. Well, if you actually go to what I'll consider the official source, the Babylon 5 cookbook, they actually suggest using scallops for spoo. They have them in two styles, Narn style or Centauri style. I've actually taken the opportunity to cook up both different recipes, and quite frankly, I have to say I kind of like the Narn version a little bit better. But once again, the cookbook suggests using scallops for spoo. I believe it's sea scallops, if anyone's really curious. Take care, guys. Bye.
As opposed to land scallops?
Yeah. Texas scallops come out of the back of the cow.
Oh, no. As much as Rocky Mountain oysters. Let's just say, as much as I love food on television, I am now very, very leery about recipes for items from our favorite TV shows. Or at least alcoholic beverages.
If you don't have spoo handy, get a can of scallops. No.
That's not spoo.
Darn scallops. I'm not with you on that one, Gare.
Okay.
Houston. That's good, Tim.
Hi, this is Jen from Berkeley, California. I'm calling to share a Stephen First anecdote with you. Back in the 1990s, I worked at Caltech, and one day I was having a conversation with a colleague about science fiction, and I mentioned that I was a Babylon 5 fan, and she came back to me a couple of days later and handed me something and said, Stephen First is my neighbor, and he asked me to give you this, and it was a signed Zircato trading card. How classy is that?
Cool.
So I'm looking forward to the interview. Always my favorite part of the show. Cheers.
Excellent. That does typify Stephen. That really does. That's the kind of guy he is. And that was a great interview we had with him a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Hilarious. It's good to know that we have at least like one really good show in the can for this year.
One per year. That's it. That's our high mark, right?
Yeah.
Thank you, Jen. Jen was in Oakland?
Berkeley.
Berkeley, yeah.
I'm sorry. God, you never tell anybody in Berkeley that they were from Oakland. Oh, shit. Ouch.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, that was bad.
Greetings, Babylon Podcast. This is Mark from Miami. Three things. First of all, Tim, you are not alone. I'm listening to episode 143, and I agree with you. I think Susan's monologue was a little overdone. When I watched the episode again, I kind of had a flash of the folks on the bridges of the Earth Force shadow ships glancing down at their watches and rolling their eyes and exchanging glances with each other, thinking, okay, when is this going to end? Second of all, I love the show. Tim, great job. I think you did a wonderful job recapping 2008. Nice highlights, nice reference back to the League of Non-Aligned Knitters. That was just classic. Yeah, because there really wasn't anything you were going to pull out of there. You had to watch the whole show. In an hour and 45 minutes, it was just long enough for me to listen to while I was putting together a rather complicated grill, which, now that I think about it, kind of looks like the Babylon Station. So
I will think fondly of the Babylon podcast every time I fire that puppy up. And finally, I am Mark from Miami, no longer living in Miami. I now live in Daytona, which is about, I don't know, an hour and 15 minutes south of Gary and Jacksonville. So maybe one of these days, you know, I'll have to meet in St. Augustine for a beer. All right, guys, love the show. Keep up the good work. Looking forward to 2009. Mark from Miami, out.
Nice.
So if he's in Daytona, does that mean he'll go to the Daytona 500 next year?
No, it means that they'll come to him.
Ooh.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
They're going to run in the backyard while he's got the grill going.
Yeah, exactly. He'll probably be one of the smart ones and get out of town when the Daytona is happening. But that's cool. I like that. Those are all my old stomping grounds. Daytona and St. Augustine and Cocoa Beach, that whole string. We don't have enough time for that, but I got all kinds of stories from back there. So don't be Mark from Miami anymore, Mark. Be Doug from Daytona.
Good morning, Dad. I'm Pat Fafters, sister of Todd and Dan Abbott. I said this in Pat Fafters. I don't think anybody said it as bad.
There with a phone worse than mine.
Clearly, that's one of Calendar's relatives.
What? Okay, since you sent that in, what did he say?
I have no clue.
I think I picked up that he was in Grand Rapids.
Yeah, that's it. That's the only thing that I heard out of all that.
And I heard him say something about, I heard Stephen's first name in there. That's it.
That's I gotta awesome. Tell you, we got a co-host that actually sounds worse than Tim.
Exactly, 153 episodes. I've never had tears coming out of my eyes like that before. That's fantastic. I love that message, and we agree with you. Thank you so much for calling. Please call again every week. Our ratings will go through the roof. That was great. So, what do you think, Tim?
Sector 14. Well, I agree mostly, except for the other part.
I got nothing.
Wow. That was classic. That was great. That almost beat the duck story. That was good stuff right there.
Hey, guys. This is Rod from Nashville. Been a while since I called, but I had to comment. I didn't imagine that we would get to any real commentary or talk about Crusade quite this soon. I mean, we've still got to get through the rest of Season 4, Season 5. But I had to comment that I'm with Summer in that when I first spotted Gary Cole on Crusade as a captain, my first thought was definitely of Sheriff Buck from the short-lived and sadly destroyed too soon series American Gothic. But see, that's what I thought was one of the better aspects of the casting of the show, and I think that's probably why Straczynski wanted him in the role, was this is a dangerous guy. This is an unpredictable guy. He may not be a good guy in a lot of ways. I mean, you may be able to trust him to a certain degree,
But he kept throwing things at us that made us think that he might not necessarily always be the best guy. Certainly not a pure white hat to a large degree. I like that. I like that a lot. And it's one of the reasons why I still shed a tear every time I think about the show, about the possibilities that are now gone. But nevertheless, also exciting to know that Jeffrey worked on the Faculty. Love that film. Great variation on the Invasion of the Body Snatchers. I really, really like that film. It's so weird, the little connection behind the scenes. It's so fun. But nevertheless, thanks, guys. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is good. You know, the idea of Mr. Brady going psycho on us is kind of cool. So.
And I will say before, I was so enamored of Crusade that I actually considered, I never considered writing fan fiction for Babylon 5. I wanted to write so many stories for Crusade, it was scary.
That's because Crusade is that, you know, big canvas that we all want to fill up.
Okay. That makes
sense. Really.
Because it was left quite bare for those of us who, you know, were really looking forward to it. Damn it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Nashville, Miami, Berkeley, Jacksonville.
Grand Rapids, the moon.
Grand Rapids. Exactly. And where is Edmund? Toronto?
Greenville.
Sorry. This is cool. This is like, we need to get a map and put little pins in all the cities.
Hi, guys. This is Gary, and I'm listening to you, Geek and Rising Star, and you talk about the whole interchange about the unrequited love phrase with Lanier and Delenn, and you sort of say, you know, how could she be that clueless, or doesn't she quite grasp it? And really, if you think back, Lanier sort of gives his own explanation for that, you know, as when he's talking to some of the other members of the religious cult during the Mimbari Civil War, he says that, you know, Delenn sees us, you know, thinks better of us than we really are, and, you know, he says in that case that, you know, he didn't want her to think differently. And I guess we could almost view it the same way, is that, you know, that's sort of his mentality to it, that, you know, that she doesn't, you know, really see the depth that this is going to, and it just, you know, stops right, you know, where it stops, I guess. And, you know, he doesn't fault her or think less of her because she doesn't see it. And I really don't think she does see it. She might just see a little, like, type of infatuation, and she doesn't realize the depths that, unfortunately, it'll later go to. I'll talk to you later, guys. Bye.
Gary, you bring up an interesting point. I wonder if Lanier, in that sense, tries to hide it as best he can, because he feels that the love he feels for her might seem base in her eyes. Someone who is much more noble in terms of how they see the universe. So maybe she just doesn't get it because he hasn't really expressed it.
Okay.
Let's call Grand Rapids and see what they say.
Hey, guys. I haven't heard a podcast in a while because my machine's been down, but I had a thought. Season 4, we hear Ivanova's voice doing the narrative. If Jerry Nelson knew that there was going to be a fifth season, would Ivanova have narrated Season 5 instead of Season 4? Just something that popped into my head. Hopefully it provides some good questions and hopefully, you have some good answers. We always have good answers. So,
like,
all right, guys, enjoy the show. Catch up to you later. Bye.
Okay.
I'm enjoying the hell out of this episode. This is great.
I actually have some news for you, for everyone. The voicemail that we couldn't hear, that was Todd. He's in the chat room. He's like, I don't even remember what I said. But he admits that he was using a BlackBerry Storm, so avoid that as a phone, everybody. It looks pretty. It has nice picture and buttons. Just don't try to use it as a phone.
There you go. All right. Ringing product endorsement from the BlackBerry people. Well, you know, regarding the caller's question about who would have done the open for year five, Jeffrey, I think, as you confirmed, that at the beginning of year four, you guys were told that that was going to be the end.
Well,
right?
That's not... I don't know that that's completely true. I'm not sure that I said that. I hope I didn't, because my recollection is at year four, we thought we were going to be able to move forward and complete Joe's vision for year five. But truly, at the end of each season, we did not know that the next season was going to happen. And when we got towards the end of four, we had been told there would not be a number five.
Oh, okay. All right.
So when we finished four, we were quite confident that there was no number five, but it wasn't at the beginning of the season that we knew that.
Okay. Well, that clarifies things then. Then who knows what the year five open would have been, because that was, you know, my impression then was that part of what the year four open was that kind of wrapping up. All the voices get in there because it's the last hurrah. But apparently that's not really the case, so never mind. You know, who knows what the season five open would have been had JMS known that they were going to go for five full years from the outset.
Yeah, I mean, a lot would have changed. I don't think that that a lot of the season four's arc would have played out quite the way that it would have. And certainly the last two or three episodes certainly wouldn't have played out. I don't imagine, you know, if we had known that we were going to move forward.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the one regret a lot of us have, is that he had to rush a lot of storylines to the finish because he didn't want to leave it unfinished. So, you know, his hands were tied because he didn't have an answer.
Right.
My regret is that I don't have a BlackBerry Storm to do this with.
Hey, guys, it's Gary from Jacksonville. How's everybody doing tonight? I have two little things. I was reading through the script book, I think it's script book 11, that had Deconstruction of Falling Stars, and it's sort of interesting how JMS comments that the script itself was actually written before Claudia left, so there are a lot of references not only to Claudia's character, but also to her upgraded rank of captain, and, you know, it's sort of interesting to see how JMS shuffles the characters around to get them to fill in what was obviously, you know, her role and her some of her little quips and things like that. Secondly, you know, I'm thinking about level gray 17. You know, here they have all that space, and then they were willing to kick Lita out of her darn apartment. What was somebody thinking? Could somebody get, like, a whole extra, like, floor or level of the station and, like, start making use of it since space is at a premium, as Zach was saying? And so, you know, gosh, you know, it just seems like they gave her the shaft yet again. I'll talk to you later, guys. Bye.
You know, that sort of thing happens in urban environments everywhere. When landlords are kicking people out and there's plenty of room, there's no reason not to do that. But, you know, landlords have their contracts, they have their agreements, and they just think that that's the way the rules have to be. There is no gray area. Certainly no gray 17.
Yeah, see, I would take exception with something that Gary said. He said, you know, they had this whole level that was empty. But take a look at the scenes that were shot in gray 17. There's crap everywhere. Okay, they even had, like, a dummy sitting there.
That was me.
A perfectly good dummy with tranquilizer darts in it, and they dumped it. There's no place for anyone to live down there. It's just junk.
I don't think anything in gray or brown would have been acceptable living quarters. You know,
a lot of people lived in brown.
Right, but like it seemed like they lived in the hallways. That's not enough private space for a telepath. I think that would have just made her crazier faster.
I forget, when all the other rogue telepaths showed up, where did we hide them? Were they in Brown?
They were in Brown Sector, but they were also living in a communal situation.
Yeah.
That means they had one potty between all of them?
Yep, pretty much.
And apparently, like, you know, one floor with, like, three sleeping mats.
Ah, the good old days.
Hi, my name is Chris, and I'm a new listener to your podcast. I just started watching Babylon 5 over again, and I'm up to Zaha Doom. And what I don't really understand is, like, the shadows build them their cities underground to hide from their enemies, but then they build, like, a giant window on the top of the city, and then Sheridan just, like, crashes his bomb through. So I don't know if you guys talked about that before, but I thought it was kind of ridiculous. On the flip side, if they showed the ship like kind of like blasting its way down like the crust, you know, to blow up the city, that would have been kind of cool. So yeah, I just wanted to know what your thoughts were on that. Thanks.
Well, yeah. Thanks,
solar,
Chris, for
solar power.
The
they needed the skylight to, you know, to collect the solar light to power their city.
I think it's real estate values. The ones closer to the big skylight have higher value.
It had a view of the ocean.
Yes, the ocean of space.
Nah, you know, that was probably, that's just a TV thing, I think, that made it a little bit easier, because...
Well, the other thing is that they built their cities underground. I don't, you know, when I think back on upon reflection, it's not that they were hiding from their enemies. They chose that location on Zaha Doom especially because that's where Lorien was residing. And from where the shadows' point of view, that was how they were honoring the first ones by inhabiting that city, and that's just how they lived. I don't know that it's necessarily a logical inconsistency.
Oh wait, here's an idea. What if they didn't build those buildings, those structures, and that had already been there and existed, and they just inhabited it?
Ooh, Zaha Doom squatters.
There you go. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Zaha Doom Pot De. Hey, Chris, thanks for listening to the show. You're doomed. Yeah. You've had the Kool-Aid. You're screwed.
Hey, Babylon Podcast people. This is Arkel. And I'm a little miffed at Jeffrey there. set up the internet in Colorado. How do you think I listen to you guys? Seriously, I mean, okay, girl who was up in the mountains, she's probably, I mean, I don't know who she was visiting, but is it at all possible? Did you ever consider that maybe she was just visiting someone who didn't have internet? There's still several million people in this country who not only don't have internet, don't even want it. Now, granted, that number is going to shrink as the internet becomes an ever more necessary, what's the word I want to use? Because I know if I use the wrong word, I'm going to get mocked mercilessly by the grammar Nazis on the forums. But an ever-increasing necessity in American life. But yeah. I live in Colorado. I get high-speed internet. And so, yeah. We're not just a bunch of cowboy hat-wearing hicks. I mean, we do wear cowboy hats. Just look at the Secretary of Interior. But we're not hicks.
Okay, so look.
Put that in your shower curtain, Willard.
Yeah, exactly. I get it. Okay, so just like the whole thing with the forward in Andy Lane's book, I'm going to use my best Ronald Reagan impression and go, I don't remember saying that. I love Colorado. That's where they have snow.
Just not when you're there, right?
Exactly.
Hey, y'all, this is Billy Ray Johnson with Jacksonville, Florida, AT&T. And we'd like to thank y'all for sending Gary back home last winter. When he was in Phoenix, we saw a very significant drop in our revenues. And, You know, in these trying economic times, we just can't afford to lose Gary's revenues for extended periods of time like that. I mean, come on, my kids got these too, you see? So if you could dissuade Gary from traveling out to visit the greater Phoenix area again in the future, at least until this economic crisis is behind us, we'd really appreciate it. All right, thank you all. Have a nice day.
Great to see that Gary got the magic mushrooms I sent to him.
Nice.
So you see, Gary is the Babylon podcast stimulus package.
There you go. I think that was it.
Actually sounded like one of the AT&T people there for a while.
I hope we start getting some better phone connections.
It edits really well with Tim. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
Yeah, it makes me sound golden.
You guys don't have to read Brad's curses in the chat room because he's the one who has to listen to it when he's editing.
Well, I feel for poor Christina. She's probably got to listen to him sitting there with choice words.
It's pretty good. Did we use him up?
We used him up.
And, wow. So what now? We go to a break and then we come back
emails.
And do emails?
Yeah, we'll take a break and do some email.
Sounds good to me.
Oh.
Hello. I'm here with my friend Carl. Oh yeah, Carl's a zombie. We're here to tell you about the Zombie Channel at www.zombiechannel.com. Yes, Carl. I was just getting to that. At the Zombie Channel, you'll discover exciting zombie entertainment, zombie video, zombie audio, and zombie news and information from all around the globe. So visit the Zombie Channel at www.zombiechannel.com. Yes, Carl. I'm sure they'll bring their brains.
And the feedback never ends, which is a good thing. Otherwise, we'd get like really bored listening to just us all the time, wouldn't we?
Totally. We wouldn't. Actually, Feedback Palooza is sponsored by Carology.tv. Between life and death is the story of our lives on the road.
Nice.
What you said.
That was good, huh?
Yeah, how long have you been working on that one? 30 seconds?
That was a verbal fart right there is what that was. Just came blurting at me.
Well, that was a golden one that you know. Polish that one up and put it on the shelf. All right, here we go. Oh, let's see. Let us start here. Okay, here we go. This comes to us from Doug Butler. Hey, I just wanted to let you know that I've been listening to your podcast since it started and really enjoy it, being a fan of B5 and all. I love the episode discussions every week, as well as the occasional guest appearances. I've been trying, albeit unsuccessfully, to get my wife into it, but we have so many other shows to watch and keep track of. She enjoys Lost, on which Mira Furlan had a recurring role, and Star Trek Deep Space Nine, so I imagine that she can get into B5 once we get going. Take care and keep up the great work on the podcast. Need to work on that, Doug. Get her going.
Yeah, it's nice. No, don't beat your wife over that. But... What did he mean by
Mira Furlan.
Oh, Mira. Oh, yes.
Mira
was so cute. I got to tell you this story. I would see Mira, you know, most every day that she was working, you know, and always greet her with the same, you know, hello, Mira, how are you? Just trying to be nice. And her answer was always the same. She would always say, I am cold and I am tired. She's a frail little woman that was always cold. You couldn't make it hot enough for her. And she did not enjoy the fact that she had to get up at, you know, 4 a.m. to come in and have makeup put all over her face. So she was always, I am cold and I am tired.
All right, next one. Gareth from Saskatchewan, Canada here. Yes, you do have listeners in Canada. Been listening since the first episode. Jeffrey, did you say something about Canadian listeners?
I love Canadian listeners.
Okay.
As I don't know. Did I say something bad, Tim? Is that what you're implying?
I don't know. I mean, since the theme of the show is Jeffrey not remembering what he said.
I seem to recall that Canadians at least have internet, unlike the people in Colorado.
Oh.
Yeah. That's Jeffrey yet. Okay, anyways, Gareth goes on to say, as for the Space Channel here in Canada, it sometimes is annoying not to get the same shows as Sci-Fi does in the States, but they were a very good source for B5 as reruns. Starting in 1998, they played all 5 years of B5 as a stripped show. Monday through Friday, as JMS envisioned, it would be replayed. They never squished the credits, and they didn't bounce it around the schedule. They were the source of my full set of tapes until they were released on DVD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All hail space.
All hail space, absolutely.
So now that Sci-Fi Channel doesn't do sci-fi anymore, can we get space on DirecTV? Because I would like to watch more sci-fi.
Yeah, except they're going to spell it SPAYCE.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
No.
Okay. Let's see if I can do the voice here. You ready for this one? Hey, it's Gary from Jacksonville.
That was quite good. That was much better than my Mira Furlan.
Yeah. Gary wants to know, is the Vorlon homeworld actually empty? Perhaps there are other Sebastians and Litas, as well as other telepathically enabled sentient species still there. Zahadum had others living there until Lita hit the destruct button. Why not the Vorlon homeworld? Maybe some Vorlon project will take thousands of years to complete, and that's what the other races have to wait for. Well, Jeffrey, you're the one under the shower curtain. What do you know?
Well, I can assure you there's no more beer left.
Beer is life, so everyone's dead.
Benningen and I cleaned them out, so there's nothing left there for sure.
Okay,
there were some cases.
No reason to go.
Yeah, exactly. That it was pretty much because it was on the planet crawl.
If there's no beer, there's no reason to go, so the place is dead.
It's dead to me.
Yeah.
Well, wasn't there the implication or throwaway line in Lost Tales? When they're talking about the Valen cruiser that President Sheridan is heading to the B5 on for the celebration, that they mentioned that it was an amalgam of left behind Vorlon technology? Or am I imagining that?
So like they had a Minbari carburetor and a Vorlon fan belt or something like that?
Yeah, right.
Hmm.
Or muffler.
Yeah.
Because the Vorlons were all about being quiet.
I would guess that at this point, the like so many other places, the Vorlon homeworld would be in foreclosure.
Maybe that's why they left the galaxy in the first place.
Yeah.
Can't afford the mortgage on the place anymore. All right, here we go. This comes to us from Clay Campbell in Sudbury, Ontario, another Canadian listener. Hello, Babylon crew. A couple of months ago, I found all 5 seasons of B5 plus the movies for sale and decided to pick them up. After I bought season 1, I was just doing some surfing and found the Babylon podcast and thought, what the heck, let's give it a listen. And now I'm hooked. Great insight, interesting interviews, and fascinating background information all in one spot that makes my watching of the series all that more enjoyable. Now my question. I remember finding Crusade at my local library and signing it out some time ago and found that, while it was enjoyable, it ended without a conclusion. I hate it when a series ends like that. That being said, would it be worth it to purchase Crusade?
Wow.
Well, Summer?
Yes.
Yeah, I would agree. Now, on the Babylon podcast website, in one of the comments for one of the shows that were there, somebody made the very good analogy that it's enjoyable, but buying the Crusade DVDs is like just getting the first 40 pages out of a 500-page novel.
Oh, okay.
I think the satisfaction I got out of Crusade was that I actually searched out all the extras. I went and got a copy of the Crusade Writer's Bible from the fan club, and I was already getting all of the magazines, so I was reading all the Crusade-related articles. So I know what they had planned. I know that there was greatness hidden underneath the TNT's request for, can we have more TNA, please?
Yeah. My little pack Marat.
I have to find out if that was a nod to, you know, TNT's request for more racy content, because that was just one of the funniest damn scenes I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
The Pac Mara porn scene?
Yeah.
You know, if you think about it, you can really, it's not a real stretch to just say that Crusade was not another series that didn't pan out, but rather just sort of served as a type of button to the B5 story, the arc. I don't know why I'm having this epiphany, but it just seemed like I've shared this with all of you, or like all of you, that, you know, it was like, oh, wait, they were just getting started and it never really got a chance and we didn't get its wheels on the ground. Well, okay. I somehow just now said, all right, wait. Let's just say, is in the same way that Deconstruction jumped to the future, Crusade kind of jumped to a different time and place. And so I can just take it as part of the whole franchise and put it all into the same package and go, there you go, that's B5.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, I know a lot of people weren't as, I guess, invested in finding out what happened in Crusade, because Crusade's story took place in a time frame that we already knew the outcome. We know that Earth gets saved. We just didn't know how, because that story hadn't been told. Even though we know the outcome of it, I wanted to know, you know, what happened.
Right. And the thing was that after you saw what JMS did with Babylon 5 in terms of the storytelling and the fact that, you know, you knew for the first year, 2 years, that it was about this great war with this great implacable enemy. And then that gets ended before the, that's not the end of the show, that there's more after that, you know, and we'll set aside the whole discussion about, you know, telling them that all in 4 years as opposed to five, you know, so forth, so on. The fact of the matter is that that was just one part of the bigger show, and that Joe gave us some nifty surprises with the storytelling. So knowing what he did with that, I wanted to see what he would do now that he had the experience behind him, you know, and had hit his stride.
Mm-hmm.
And we never got to see that. And that's, mm-hmm.
to me, what was most intriguing was it wasn't going to take them the full 5 years. You know, the discovery that, oh, we have a cure wasn't going to happen at the end of year five. It was going to happen at the end of year two. And then the next phase was going to be them dealing with different factions from different worlds, including people, you know, humans, who didn't want Earth to be saved. I wanted to see that.
Yeah.
I know I've mentioned this sometime in the past, but I'll stand by this. Had the Gathering and Crusade both had Christopher Franke's music, the entire storyline just would have flowed so much more. It all just would have been the same package. I stand by that the differences in the music just sort of changed the whole tempo, the feel, the texture, the way that the, you know, and I know that with Crusade, that was by design. You know, that was part of the big picture, you know, that it had to have a different look, feel, and smell, and changing the music gave them that. But looking back at it now and knowing that it only had a short run, had that music been Christopher Franke's, it would have been integrated into the continuance of the B5 story.
Well, I think that's why they did go back and redo The Gathering with Franke's music when they re-aired it on TNT, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the version we get in the
in the DVD.
than DVDs.
Yes. The only version you can hear Stuart Copeland's music is on the Laserdisc, which I also owned.
You have a Laserdisc machine?
Japanese import Laserdisc.
You have a way to play it?
Huh? Yeah. I have two working Laserdisc players. I was down to one, but Michael fixed it, my original.
Wow.
I bought that beast in 1992. It still works.
Wow.
And I bought one of the last ones ever made in 1999. I didn't even open that up till 2 years ago when Mike had this one to fix. So, thank you, Michael.
Yeah. From my old repair days.
He was like,
I still had a laser head aligner.
Yeah, he's like, you've got a what? I refuse to give that up because I do have some stuff that on it that's not on DVD yet. And I'm kind of against buying the original Star Wars trilogy with the remastered crap. So I have the original unremastered Star Wars, the first, episodes 4, 5, and 6 on Laserdisc.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, you should have Michael fix your TV for you then. And what did he say he was going to do? He was going to tighten the power
supply. He said he was going to tighten up the power supply. So I'll see if I can open it up without breaking it or electrocuting myself.
I have no bench to do that
okay,
with right
never
now.
Mind. You know what?
I will eventually.
No, literally a couple times a week, Dan has this soldering iron out on his desk, so I'll ask him.
Yeah, all you need to do is just touch it up, solder it. That'll at least help it. Might not fix it, but it'll help.
There you go. The Babylon 5 Tech Podcast. At your service.
That's right. Babylon potholes.
Okay. Next one. This comes to us from Lowell. Hi, everyone. This is
Lowell.
Excuse me. Yeah. Lowell Lowell.
Lowell.
Excuse me. Sorry, Lowell. This is in reference to something I said about Rising Star. So here we go. Hi, everyone. To give you some background, my grandmother lived on the Ohio River in Portsmouth, Ohio. When I was visiting her in the 1960s, I can remember the sonic booms and the windows shaking as military jets were flying Mach 1 down the river. So to me, I did not think the scene in the episode where the walls were shaking as the White Stars were flying over was that cheesy. So there we go.
Oh yeah, totally, totally. I remember my grand. I was born in St. Louis, and my early years were in Missouri, and they would publish it in the newspaper so people wouldn't freak. So you knew it would be on the front page of the Post Dispatch, the St. Louis Post Dispatch. It would put right on the front page. They would put the times that they were going to do the sonic boom testing, so people wouldn't freak out and think that it was the Russians sending missiles over. So that you would go in and I remember my grandpa would take me outside and we would watch to see if we could see something. We didn't know what it was, but we knew sonic booms were going to happen. We had to go see, and we would stand there and stare at the sky, and you'd hear, and that would be it. And so yeah, exactly. Oh. And I'm pretty sure that in Portsmouth they have the internet.
Well, Jeremy Cunningham wants to let us know. He says, I just want to drop a little line. Thank you for continuing to create a great podcast. Miss Patricia Tallman is going to be attending Starfest, the sci-fi con here in Denver in mid-April. Yay. So they have internet in Denver because Jeremy sent this as an email. So just want to let you know that.
From his hotel room in Illinois.
Okay, well, that's true. Okay. There wasn't a postmark on the email, so I couldn't tell where it came from. Okay, next one. This comes to us from Star Stuff. Lovely and talented Star Stuff. Hey, folks. This is about your show 146, where you discuss the episode Endgame. And really, you got me thinking. Tim brought up the theme of sacrifice and loss, just specifically referring to Sheridan being willing to lay down his life for Earth, and Marcus willing, and unfortunately succeeding in giving his life for Susan. While listening to your discussion, the thought popped up in my mind that this is actually not so much about two different things, sacrifice versus loss, but about the same issue, sacrifice. And here Babylon 5 comes full circle again. At the end of Season 2, in the episode Comes the Inquisitor, there is something of a foreshadowing. For when Delenn exclaims that the number of lives at stake do not matter, lives are all worth the same.
And Mr. Sebastian adds that there can be no greater love for another than to lay down one's life for that person. In Endgame, both is happening despite the fact that Sheridan is rescued at the very last second. But he was willing and ready to lay down his life for his home planet. And at the same time, Marcus makes the very same sacrifice for Ivanova. To borrow from JMS, it's the large story writ small, or vice versa.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm getting the eye from Michael here.
Okay, well, can I read the last one then?
Last one. Okay, fine.
It is the last one. Truly, it is the last one. And we'll all be caught up. This comes to us from Mama Cat from the League of Non-Aligned Knitters. And she says, the asked and answered discussion. There was some discussion that some of the questions by fans back in the bad old Usenet days are just moronic. For example, the comment about Catherine Sakai as a token Asian or some such. I laughed at that. Usenet? Moronic? Surely you jest. But really, bear in mind that a lot of the people posting on the old group were really not fans per se. Some people watched B5 because it was there rather than because they loved it. So the discussions could get snarky at times and not always positive about B5. And some people just felt that it was cool to act like a jerk. So yeah, it was moronic. Well, I think the idea of having all this in book form is interesting. On another level, it is really profoundly depressing to me. I spent way too much time on the group back then. Revisiting it all is something that makes me shudder. Except for those times when JMS got on there, which always made me giggly and fangirlish. I loved that stuff. It really made me feel like it was the fan's show, which was a great feeling.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah, the one thing I would make comment is, you know, when I made the comments about some of the moronic posts on there, that's not the bulk of the book.
Mm-mm.
You know, those are clearly important things that allow JMS to address some issues in terms of, in broad strokes, certain cliches and preconceptions people have of what should be in science fiction shows or television in general. But for the most part, it is really JMS responding to the fans, and it really does. You do get the sense that it was, you know, a living, breathing process. You know, it wasn't a mysterious thing that happened on a soundstage in Hollywood somewhere, you know, that this product was put out there and you were talking with the guy who was making the show.
While he was making the show.
Yes, exactly.
That was the big difference. Does that book have also the chats that we had on thestation.com?
We got a pre-release mock-up, basically.
She had mentioned that it included chat sessions that were no longer online or never online to begin with.
Because, yeah. When we first set up the station.com, we had like iChat version V001 and it worked and it was functional and there was a community that was there all the time. And what we would typically do we would shoot from 7 in the morning till 7 at night, and usually between like 6 and 7 at the end of the day, I was able to pull either cast or crew from the stage and bring them into the offices, and we would put them online and they would chat with the fans for a bit. And there was always that same kind of, you know, frankly, giddy attitude that suddenly would blossom, you know, after a day of watching the chats happen, then all of a sudden somebody would come in and actually talk to them other than me, which they were bored with. That people would suddenly jump up and they'd get all gaga because they were talking to Snackman or to Mira or whoever it was that would come in and join us. So I get that. Cat, I get it. You know, that was fun. Those were good days. But looking back, we may just agree it was moronic.
Well, that's it.
We are done.
Pitakapalooza! That wasn't all Gary all the time.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. You know what? I bet you Gary farmed out those questions and asked other people to ask him for them. I bet you.
Gary submitting under pseudonym.
There you go.
Hey, kid, come here. I'll give you a nickel if you put this question up to the...
So if you want to contribute your own feedback, you can send an email to babylonpodcast@gmail.com. Contribute to the never-ending threads over at farpointforums.com. There's a Babylon 5 set of forums in there, and the never-ending thread is 83 by 9 by 12. You know what that is. Our phone number is 206-338-2259. Make sure you use a clear, non-AT&T BlackBerry Storm phone. But 206-338-2259.
And we'll see you
Next game.
Thank you, Colorado.